The ballroom of the Crescent Pack smells like what power smells like. Cedarwood from the floorboards, the salt sweat of lycanthropes who've shifted recently, and underneath it all, night-blooming jasmine from the gardens outside. The chandeliers aren't crystal. They're carved from some stone that catches firelight and throws it back wrong, making the shadows move like they're alive. Sarah stands at the threshold of the archway, her back to the wall, watching. She'd told herself she wouldn't come. Told herself 3 times in the mirror, 4 times in the car, and 5 times standing in the parking lot with her hands shaking. But the twins had asked. So here she was. And here he was. Kieran sat at the high table like he'd been born there, which technically he had. The alpha king of the Crescent Pack, lineage stretching back 8 generations, power written into his spine. He was thinner than she remembered. His jaw had gotten sharper. Grief, maybe. Or just time doing its work. His hair was longer, curling at the collar in that way that used to make her hands itch. He was smiling at the woman beside him. Sarah's wolf went absolutely still. That particular kind of still that means a predator has caught wind of something. The woman had red hair. Actual red. Not the dark auburn that Sarah had. Her hand was on his arm, and she was laughing at something he'd said, and Kieran was tilting his head toward her, the way he used to tilt his head toward Sarah when she said something that mattered. 3 years. It had been almost exactly 3 years since Sarah had seen him last. 3 years since she'd walked into his private quarters at midnight and found him with his ex, his hands in her hair, his mouth on her neck, his scent. That particular cocktail of pine and smoke, and the darker thing underneath that only she had ever been able to name, absolutely drenched in her perfume. She'd left without saying anything, hadn't even taken her things. Just gone. Her breath feels too thin now. The ballroom is tilting slightly, which is ridiculous because she's not the kind of woman who faints. She's never been that kind of woman. Mom, Mom, you're gripping the wall. Sarah's eyes dropped to her hand. Her fingernails had left marks in the paint. She forced her fingers open. Emma, 7 years old and somehow her father's face in miniature, was staring up at her with that expression that meant she was about to ask uncomfortable questions. Beside her, Lucas was already moving. He had Kieran's restlessness, that constant need to be in motion. The twins were supposed to be at the children's event in the other ballroom. There was a children's event. She'd checked the schedule 3 times. We wanted to see the dancers, Lucas said, which was a lie, but at least it was a creative one. They said the ice dancers were coming. They're in the East Wing. We got bored, Emma said, which was also a lie. But the truth underneath it was worse. They'd gotten curious about the man they'd never met, about the alpha of their bloodline. Sarah's chest felt like something was gnawing at it from the inside. Come on, she said, and reached for Emma's hand. She didn't mean to look back. That was the mistake, looking back. Because when she looked back, Kieran's head was turning. His eyes were scanning the crowd for the source of whatever he'd caught on his senses. And those eyes were pale green like they always were. And they found her. They stuck. Time does something weird in that moment. Stretches. Contracts. Does something in between. Kieran stood. Just rose from his chair like the woman beside him had stopped existing the moment Sarah's scent hit him. The Alpha King's terrible focus. She'd called it once. As a joke. The way he zeroed in on whatever he wanted like nothing else in the world existed. Sarah? He said. He was too far away for her to hear him, but she read it off his lips, and then he was moving. Fast walk, Sarah told the twins, surprising herself with how steady her voice was. We're leaving. Fast walk. Right now. But the dancers. Now. Emma. She can feel him coming. It's not magic. Nothing so clean as that. It's just that she knows this man's stride, knows the space he takes up. Knows the way the other werewolves in the room unconsciously pulled back as he moved through them, clearing a path like he was cutting through water. She got Emma and Lucas to the hallway, the wide marble hallway with the mirrors and the smell of expensive soap, when his hand caught her shoulder. Not hard, gentle even. That was almost worse. Sarah, don't. She turned. She'd spent 3 years not turning toward that voice, and it cost her something to do it now. Kieran looked at her like she'd been alive in his chest the whole time, beating against his ribs. His skin was darker than she remembered, or maybe he just spent more time outdoors now. He had a scar above his left eyebrow that hadn't been there before. His hands were shaking. The twins had gone very quiet. "Your children," he said, not looking at them, still locked on her. "You have children. I have to go. Those are my..." "No," Sarah said, and she had to physically lock her jaw against the sound her wolf wanted to make. "You don't get to do this. You don't get to see them. You made your choices. You don't understand what happened that night." "I understand exactly what happened," Sarah said. "I saw it." The scar above his eyebrow creased as he frowned. "You didn't. You couldn't have." But she was already moving, pulling Emma and Lucas toward the parking garage, where the night was cleaner and darker, and mercifully free of his scent, mixing with hers in the recycled air. Behind them, Kieran made a sound that was almost the beginning of a howl. Chapter 2. The Unraveling. The coffee shop is aggressively neutral. Beige walls, blonde wood furniture, that's trying too hard not to offend anyone. Sarah picked it specifically because it was far enough from her place that they couldn't track her by scent, close enough to neutral territory that he wouldn't bring the whole pack with him, and because she needed to tell him the truth about what he was asking. She was there first. Coffee that had gone cold an hour ago. A notebook open to a page she'd been staring at but not reading. The words kept sliding around. Kieran walked in like he was still cutting through water. Like the whole room had to make space for him. He was in human form, but barely. There was too much wolf in his movements, too much of that predator's grace. His eyes were still that pale green, and they found her immediately. He sat across from her without being asked. "You kept them," he said. "Not a question. You were with someone else. I left. I moved on. I had the twins 3 months later. You were pregnant. Clearly. And you didn't. You didn't tell me." Sarah looked at him across the table. There was a scratch on his neck, new enough that it was still pink. It took her approximately 2 seconds to recognize it for what it was. Claw marks. Probably from when he'd shifted in anger. The woman from the ballroom probably had nothing to do with it. She made herself care less about that. "I told you you were making a mistake with that woman," Sarah said. "2 weeks before I found you with her, I told you. You said you had it handled. You said you knew what you were doing. Isabel was leverage. I don't care what she was. But that was a lie. And they both knew it." Sarah cared very much what Isabel was. Isabel was the daughter of a northern pack, powerful and connected, and exactly the kind of strategic alliance that an alpha king was supposed to be building. Isabel was what made sense. Sarah had always been what felt right. And those are different things. "Her father was threatening to cut off our northern supply routes," Kieran said, and his hands were on the table now, palms down, like he was anchoring himself. "If we didn't formalize an agreement, if I didn't, he wanted proof that I was serious about the union, that I wasn't going to abandon Isabel for a personal preference. So you let him find you with her?" "I let her kiss me, that's all. That's all it was. I saw your hands in her hair, because when she came at me, I was trying to make it look real enough for his spy to believe it." Kieran's voice had dropped to something almost raw. "I pushed her away. You would have seen that if you'd stayed another 5 seconds." The coffee shop suddenly felt too small, too hot. Sarah could feel her wolf pacing behind her ribs, restless and angry. And something else, something softer. "You should have told me," she said. "I was trying to protect the pack, trying to handle it." "You should have told me," Sarah repeated. "You should have let me help. Or you should have let me go. You should have given me a choice, Kieran. Not left me standing in a dark hallway, with my heart on the floor." He flinched at the name. She never called him Kieran. She'd always called him Kay, or sometimes my king when she was being soft with him, which was most of the time. Kieran was formal. Kieran was distant. "I should have," he said. "You're right. I should have." The admission hung there. It was too easy, almost. Too clean. "Why did you move on?" she asked. "Why didn't you come find us?" Kieran was quiet for a long time. Long enough that she could hear the espresso machine hissing in the background. The beep of the register. Someone's phone buzzing. "Because I looked for you," he finally said. For 18 months, I looked. I had every tracker I could trust, every connection my pack had. And there was nothing. It was like you'd evaporated. And then, he paused, rubbed his face. Then I saw you in the database. Vital records. Emma and Lucas Crane. Born to Serafina Crane. No father listed. No pack affiliation. Sarah felt her stomach drop. She'd changed her name. Legally changed it. She'd thought that would be enough. You erased us, Kieran continued. From the paperwork. From the record. As much as you could. So I understood that you didn't want to be found. That you didn't want the twins to know about. About me. About what they are. They're human, Sarah said. They're half-shifter. They haven't shown any signs. They eat food like normal children. They sleep through the night. They don't. They haven't shifted, Kieran said. Not unkindly. Yet. But it comes, Sarah. You know it does. Puberty, stress, a full moon if they're sensitive to it. And they're going to wake up one day, understanding things they shouldn't, smelling things they can't explain, feeling the urge to run on four legs under the starlight. This is what she's been afraid of. Not the pack. Not him. The specific, inexorable fact of what their children are. What she's been racing against. I know, she said quietly. You can't raise them without the context. Without teaching them what they are. I can try. Sarah. He leaned forward. Why did you come to the ballroom? She didn't answer for a moment. The truth was that she'd gotten a message through channels she didn't entirely understand, suggesting that the Crescent Pack was hosting a public event. A family event, with activities for children. The twins had been asking about their father, vaguely, the way children do when they're testing the waters, when they're wondering if the absence means rejection. She'd thought they could go. See the pack from the outside. Watch the dancers. Maybe catch a glimpse of what Kieran had built without him ever knowing they were there. She'd gotten that wrong. The twins were curious, she said. Not about the ballroom. I didn't plan for you to see us. I know, but you brought them anyway. Into my territory. Where they'd be safe. Where I could. He stopped. Swallowed. Why would you do that if you didn't want me to know about them? Sarah opened her mouth. Closed it. This is the thing about paranormal romance. The thing about mates. About the bond that some people have and some people don't. She and Kieran had been lucky that way. The connection between them had been instant and total and terrifying. She'd walked into the Crescent Pack at 22 years old, thought she was just going to do 6 months of contract work, and instead she'd met him, and her entire nervous system had reorganized itself around his existence. She'd also spent 3 years teaching herself not to feel that. I don't know, she said, which was as close to the truth as she could get. I wasn't thinking. They wanted to go, and I took them. Kieran nodded slowly, like he understood what she wasn't saying, like her subconscious had made a decision her conscious mind hadn't caught up with yet. I'm not with anyone, he said. The woman from the ballroom, Stephanie, she's the daughter of one of our allied pack leaders. Her father was pushing for a match, and I wasn't entirely against it, because at least it was simple. At least it didn't feel like something could rip apart at any moment. Sarah felt her hands curl into fists under the table. I didn't know, he continued, what you were going to look like still. I thought maybe time would have changed that. I thought maybe I'd see you, and you'd be a stranger, and then I could let you be a stranger. But you're not. Stop. You walked in, and I forgot how to breathe properly. Stop, Sarah said again. You don't get to do this. You don't get to just say these things and make everything okay. I'm not trying to make it okay. There's nothing okay about this. The wall behind him is the color of old bone. There's a watercolor painting of a mountain range above his head. Impersonal. Decorative. Meant to comfort nobody. Why should I trust you? Sarah asked. Why should I believe any of this is true? Kieran pulled his phone out. He typed something with steady fingers, then turned the screen toward her. A document. An official communication from the Northern Pack Council, dated to 3 years and 2 months ago. It detailed a trade negotiation. It specified several conditions, and at the bottom, in careful language that amounted to official record, it noted that the Alpha King had agreed to form a public alliance with Isabel Northcross to secure the agreement. The date of the letter was 5 days before Sarah found them together. "It's a formal record," Kieran said, "that I was playing a political game, that she was a game piece, that nothing between us was real. Why didn't you show me this 3 years ago? Because you were gone." He said it simply, like that explained everything. And maybe it did. "The twins," Sarah said, because she needed to say something that wasn't about the way her hands were shaking. "You can't have them every other weekend. You can't show up in their lives and then disappear when it gets hard. I'm not asking for that." "Then what are you asking for?" Kieran closed his eyes. When he opened them again, there was something in them that looked like surrender, but that could have been a trick of the light. "I'm asking for you to let me be part of their lives. Slowly, carefully, whatever way you think is best." He paused. "I'm asking if there's any possibility that I could be part of your life too." Chapter 3. The Reckoning. The house was small and quiet. Three bedrooms in a neighborhood that was aggressively normal. White picket fences and swing sets, and the sound of lawnmowers on Saturday morning. Sarah had bought it specifically because it was nowhere that a paranormal being would ever choose to live. It was the human world, fully inhabited, safe. Kieran stood on the porch, looking like he'd never seen architecture that small before. "Emma and Lucas are at school," Sarah said. "They'll be back in an hour. You have 40 minutes. "I don't need 40 minutes. "Then what do you need?" He was quiet. The afternoon was cool, fall transitioning into winter, and his breath was visible in the air. "To explain myself properly," Kieran finally said, "not the political situation. You understand that now, but the fact that I didn't come looking as hard as I should have, that I gave up." "You didn't give up." "I did. After 18 months, I stopped. I told myself it was because you'd made your choice. But the truth was that I was tired of hoping you'd let me back in, tired of the rejection. So when I saw you in the database, and I understood that you'd deliberately erased us from the record, I let myself believe that you were right, that it was better this way, that you didn't want me." "I didn't want you," Sarah said. "I wanted you to be someone different, someone who trusted me enough to tell me what was happening." "I know, and I'm sorry, but I'm also sorry for believing you when you disappeared. I should have kept trying. I should have shown up on your doorstep and made you actually tell me to my face that you didn't want me around." Sarah turned away. She could feel her wolf pressing against the inside of her skin, wanting to acknowledge the apology, wanting to move toward him. But there was a difference between understanding why someone did something and forgiving them for it. "Serafina," he used her full name. "Look at me." "No, please." She turned. He was watching her with that terrible focus, and there was red creeping up his neck, the sign of a shift barely held at bay. "I have spent 3 years loving you from a distance," he said quietly. "I have thought about your face constantly. I have wondered if you were happy. I have hoped you were happy, even though every second of hoping that was killing me." "You're a liar." "Yes. You let me find you with another woman, and then you didn't come after me." "Yes. You raised Stephanie from the ashes of what we had." "No," he said, and his voice cracked. "I raised nothing. I built nothing. I kept the pack alive. I kept our people safe. And I kept myself alive. Because I had to. Because I was the alpha. But everything else in me has been in your court. You know me well enough to know that's true." And this is the part where the story is supposed to break open, where she's supposed to forgive him, supposed to let herself move toward him, supposed to reconstruct something from the wreckage. "I don't know what to do," Sarah said. "You could start by trusting me not to disappear again." "I can't take that risk." "What risk?" "The risk that I'll hurt you, or the risk that you'll let yourself love me again." Sarah's laugh was hollow. "Aren't those the same thing?" "No," Kieran said. "But I understand why it feels that way right now. There's the sound of a car pulling up outside. The afternoon light is gold through the kitchen window. Everything is impossibly ordinary." "That's them," Sarah said. They stood in the kitchen together, separated by the expanse of cold tile, and 3 years of silence, and one fundamental betrayal that was also, apparently, not a betrayal at all. Emma came through the door first, her backpack hitting the counter with the thud of elementary school existence. Lucas followed, already talking about something that happened at recess. A game. Some complicated rules. Then they both stopped. They smelled him. Even without the wolf fully awake in them, they could smell what he was. Not just Alpha, not just Shifter, their father, their bloodline wearing a man's shape. "Hi," Kieran said, and his voice was different, softer, less dangerous. "I'm Kieran." "You're the man from the ballroom," Emma said. She was studying him with that serious expression that was all Sarah. "You were looking at Mom like she was the most important thing you'd ever seen." Kieran blinked, actually blinked, like a child had just given him the most accurate description of his own emotional state, and he was wondering how that was possible. "Yeah," he said. "That's because she is. Even though you were with that other lady." "I wasn't with her," Kieran said. He didn't look at Sarah. "That was a mistake. A stupid mistake I made when I was afraid." "Of what?" Lucas asked. He had Kieran's restlessness, but he was also patient in a way his father didn't seem to be. "Analytical. Of losing something important." "And did you?" "For a while," Kieran said. "Yeah, I did." Sarah watched her children watch their father, watched them piece together the shape of him, his scent, his voice, his enormous presence in their small kitchen. Watched the moment when they understood, without being told, what he was to them. "Mum said we're half," Emma said. "You're not fully human, no. Will we turn into wolves? Eventually, maybe, when you're older, if you want to." Lucas processed this, like a puberty thing. "Similar, yeah, more intense, faster." "Okay," Lucas said, which was the perfect Lucas response to information. "Process it, accept it, move on." Kieran looked at Sarah then, actually looked at her, and she could see the question in his eyes. "Do I have a chance to be part of this? Of them?" She thought about the coffee shop, about him showing her the official record, about the fact that he'd stopped looking not because he'd given up, but because she'd given him an impossible choice, and he'd chosen to accept it. She thought about the woman he'd almost built a life with, out of exhaustion. And she thought about the truth. That trust is not something that happens in a moment. It happens across moments. Across small decisions and small betrayals prevented, and small words kept. "We need rules," Sarah said. "Okay," Kieran said immediately. "You don't get to shift around them until they're ready for it. You don't get to scare them with the wolf. I won't. You don't get to disappear. Consistency matters more than frequency. I understand. And you don't get to ask me for anything for at least 6 months." He flinched at that one. "Sarah, that's the rule. 6 months is a long time." "It is," she agreed. "And you're going to spend it proving that you can be part of their lives without needing something from me, without expecting reconciliation or forgiveness or," she paused, "anything. If you can do that, then maybe we talk about what comes next." Kieran nodded slowly. 6 months. Starting now. He looked at the twins, then back at Sarah. Then he held out his hands like he was showing her that he wasn't a threat. Which was absurd, because an Alpha King would always be a threat. But she understood what he meant. "Starting now," he said. The script ends with Kieran on the floor in the living room, building something with Lucas using wooden blocks. Emma is asleep on the couch, her head against her mother's shoulder. Outside, the world is dark and cold. Kieran looks up at Sarah, and there's no expectation in his eyes. No urgency, just the simple fact of being allowed to be here. And Sarah, watching her children be whole in a way they've never been before, understands that forgiveness isn't about erasing what happened. It's about deciding that what comes next matters more than what came before. The screen fades.